Welcome to night 15 of the 1001 Nights podcast. Each episode, we bring you the ancient mythologies of the Arabian Nights as reinterpreted by modern authors. This week, we feature the story of the Second Mendicant by Laurie Goldstein and the story of the Envied and the Envier by Megan Kensel. The stories are famously told by Scheherazade in an effort to enrapture the Sultan in order to forestall her execution and save her people. In case you need a reminder, the Prince of Hollywood, the second half-blind drug dealer, also known as the Second Mendicant, was telling his story to Cole the Porter and the mysterious wealthy ladies who had threatened to kill everyone there at their party after Cole had inquired about their bizarre activities. The Prince of Hollywood had described how he was falsely accused of plagiarizing and cast out of his luxurious former life. He had taken a job as a grip on a film, when he discovered a secret underground passageway that led him to a beautiful woman. They quickly fell in love, but it was revealed that she was the lover of a powerful djinn, and the prince accidentally called him to them. The djinn caught them together and gave the girl a knife to cut off the prince's thumbs in order to prove she did not love him. She walked towards him with the knife when morning dawned and Scheherazade ceased to tell her tale. But the Sultan so badly desired to hear the end of the story that he allowed her to live till the next night so that she may finish it. And so we come to night 15. Scheherazade and the Sultan lie together in the royal bed. The Sultan stares lazily up at the ceiling. At some point, he nods to Scheherazade, his bride. And, understanding, she begins to tell the story once more.
Tears streamed down my cheeks, and when she reached me, standing above me as I lay in a heap on the marbled floor, she raised the knife, which looked like a machete in her small hands. Our eyes met, and our magic overtook his. And the djinn saw it all. He saw the magic, the love that now existed between us. The love that used to belong to her and him was gone. The djinn calmly transferred the blade from her hand to mine. "Then you," he said. "She only has need for one ear in order to hear what I will call her for the rest of her days." The metal was still warm from her skin, skin I had touched and that had touched me. And I knew the story I would write would need to be retitled, "How a Prince Became a Coward Who Became a Man." The knife clanked against the marble, chipping it, a crack in that place that had also been a prison. Her eyes remained locked on mine, and mine on hers. And in that moment, in that gaze, we lived the life we would not be able to live. Days of laughter and nights of love, and children and grandchildren, and a life well lived. Perhaps we would have both escaped unscathed if she had not done what she did next. But she did. She couldn't help herself. I understood the instinct. She brought her fingers to my eye and touched my lashes, a gentle touch she could not resist giving. Her body showed the love contained in our eyes. And the djinn watched. It was like she was flaunting it right in front of him. He wasn't going to let her have a happiness that did not include him. "Since you were a mere child," he said, "I have watched over you, woman, giving you everything you desired, save for one." She broke the life we held in our gaze and faced the djinn. "One?" she asked, like the child she was 25 years ago. The djinn smiled, and a chill froze my insides. "Yes," he said, "the one thing you've always wanted." "A role," she said with longing. "A role. A most excellent one. You'd have been the queen of Hollywood with this." "Would have been?" She sucked in a breath and clutched her long throat with her delicate fingers, as if bracing herself. "You would have been spectacular," he said. And with that, he may have ripped her limb from limb, for whatever was left inside her died for good. She had held on to the dream of being the queen of Hollywood all these long 25 years. How cruel he truly was, to dangle that carrot of a film role before her, to fill her with hope that he'd make her dream a reality, and then to snatch it away. Why? He had to know it would leave her in ruins. Without hope, we have nothing left to live for. I knew that well. Her head fell, her body hollowed, her green eyes dulled. No magic was left within them. She was no longer just in a prison in this home, but in her heart. And not even I would be able to break her free. The djinn clicked his wingtips together and pulled me to the side. One can choose to believe one is wronged, or one can give the benefit of the doubt. While I would enjoy doing the former, there is a piece of me that is gravitating toward the latter. And yet there is too much evidence to let this go entirely unpunished. But what form should that punishment take? You've already dug latrines. Ah, perhaps it is not a human punishment you deserve. You are barely a man. Maybe the shape of a dog or an ass. Yes, maybe an ape is what will show you the error of your ways. Having no idea what this djinn might do to me, but believing in that moment that anything was possible, I replied, I once wrote a script about karma. I've been a believer ever since. I'm sure you will find that if you leave me unscathed, you will be rewarded for your mercy. And I ask of you, pardon me as the envied man did the envier. He bent his head towards me and rested nose to nose. And how was that? He asked. And I answered as follows. There were two little girls that lived on a cul-de-sac in the Santa Clarita Valley of Southern California, Caitlin and Maggie. At a very young age, scowling little Maggie decided Caitlin was stealing her dream life. But Caitlin has a my-size Barbie. Why can't I have one? Because, Maggie, we got you the Barbie Jeep for your birthday instead. That's what you asked for, remember? Her mother would try to reason. Yeah, but Caitlin has both. Why does Caitlin get everything I want? Maggie, you need to be happy with what you do have. Lots of children in the world have no toys at all. I don't care. I don't wanna. It's not fair, was her whiny refrain. Little Caitlin, though, showed Maggie nothing but kindness, always letting Maggie borrow her toys and never complaining when Maggie pretended they were lost. But the more Maggie envied Caitlin, the sweeter Caitlin seemed to become. And though it's true Maggie would have been a brat regardless, her sense that Caitlin was especially lucky was actually quite accurate. When Caitlin's great-grandma was just a little girl growing up in Kinnity, Ireland, in the shadow of the Slieve Blue Mountains, she loved to play in the clover fields, endlessly searching for the perfect four-leafed sprout. One day, little Rosen heard giggling. "Hello? Who's there?" she called, following the sounds deeper into the shadows. "Do you want to play? I've got some sweets in my pocket. Hello?" The giggling got louder, and she noticed a sparkle in the brook. Just as she was about to wade into the shallow water for a closer look, she heard a tiny voice yelp, "Watch out, Rosen!" Rosen jumped back and fell down onto the mossy bank. "Ouch!" she cried. The giggling started up again. "Come out! Stop hiding! Is that you, Brennan?" Rosen demanded. Then suddenly, two fairies appeared before her eyes, wings aflutter. "Oh, fairies! Oh my, you're beautiful!" The fairies giggled with even more delight. "Why, thank you, Rosen. You're quite lovely as well," the freckled one said. "You caught us taking a dip. Very sorry if we spooked you." "I've always wanted to see a fairy. Brennan will never believe me."
Oh, Pooyon Brennan, magic is real for those who believe in it. If you didn't believe already, you wouldn't have heard us at all,
the other fairy said, making herself laugh.
You see, all this time you've been looking for clovers. You've really been looking for us.
And with that, a poof of gold dust appeared, and in that a sparkly clover that floated right down into little Rosin's hand.
A four-leafed clover, she gasped. Not just any four-leafed clover, Rosin, but a fairy clover. Keep this with you always, and you and your daughters will always have luck, with fairies by your side whenever you need us,
winked the fairies, making her freckles dance. And so it was that Rosin's luck would one day become Caitlin's. What the fairy didn't say, though, was that should Rosin or any of her daughters grow selfish or unkind, their luck would die, and the clover would dry up. To this day, though, it's still twinkling with gold dust and green as a spring day. They knew there was no need to warn Rosin at all. When Caitlin and Maggie were in fourth grade, Caitlin's family got a puppy, and Maggie had a tantrum in the backyard.
I can't believe that Caitlin got a dog before me, and it's a spaniel! Spaniels are my favorite! She screamed.
Her father tried to calm her, but he was a weak man. But Maggie, he said, your mother's allergic, you know that.
I don't care. Mom should get unallergic then. Isn't the dog next door going to make her sick?
Well, yes, he conceded.
Well, good. We should just tell Caitlin and your family to move away then. I'm sick of her getting everything I deserve.
She wailed through angry tears and tore into the house, slamming the screen door.
Maggie, that's not nice.
Her father tried to scold, chasing after her. Caitlin heard the whole thing over the stucco brick wall that separated their yards. When her parents told her they were moving to a new house that night at dinner, the wise little girl smiled, hoping this would help Maggie feel better, wishing she could share her luck the same way she shared her toys. Caitlin's new house was in one town over, in one of the newer housing developments. It had a generous pool and a built-in barbecue. When the girls reconnected at Clarita Junior High, this information lit the icky green slime of envy newly aflame in Maggie's gut.
Wow, you're having a pool party for every girl in the seventh grade class? Your new house must be huge, Maggie sneered, all the while thinking, of course, I'm on the swim team, but she has a pool in her effing backyard. Stupid, lucky bitch.
Oh, yeah, well, I guess the backyard is big.
Yeah, Caitlin replied innocently.
I can't believe you have a pool now. Must be way better than the little old cul-de-sac, huh?
Maggie was just pushing for Caitlin to say something snobby, but of course she didn't.
Well, it's nice having a pool, but I miss the cul-de-sac too sometimes, she said sincerely,
beginning to feel uneasy about Maggie's all-too-familiar jealousy.
Well, sure. I guess maybe I'll come, said Maggie.
Great. I'd love to introduce you to all my friends from the Stevenson Ranch.
Sure. Whatever. I don't need your rich friends, though. Thanks. Gotta go now, though. Bye!
Maggie spat back through a smile and darted into class. Maggie did show up to the party, though, and Caitlin didn't think twice about giving her the standard pool party welcome she gave all her friends. Jumping out of the pool, splashing and running, dripping wet, with arms outstretched.
Maggie, you came! Guys, this is my best friend from childhood, Maggie!
But Maggie came very purposefully bearing ill will. She spent the night recruiting and conspiring with a few other mean girls, you know the type, to pants Caitlin's bikini bottoms and push her into the pool. The sabotage was undertaken towards the end of the night, while they all stood shivering and posing for a group picture.
Ha 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 ha!
Caitlin heard their mean laughter even underwater as she groped around for her bottoms.
Just as she almost caught hold of them, a rush of bubbles hit her in the face, and suddenly she found her whole head in an air bubble, and a magical sight before her eyes.
Hi, Caitlin. Here, put your bottoms on. I won't look.
Giggled a wispy red-haired fairy, looking away with the bottoms outstretched in her hand.
Oh my god, my mom said this might happen one day. You're a fairy, like in the story with my grandma.
Yes, giggled the fairy. My name's Annie, and I'm here to tell you a secret.
A secret?
Now? Well, maybe put your bikini bottoms back on first.
She snorted a little. Oh my god, Caitlin gasped, blushing and rushing to put them back on.
Sorry, so embarrassing.
Your envious friend wants to ruin your reputation, but little did she know, I had a special delivery for you down there, said Annie with a twinkle in her eye.
Is it the photographic evidence of me trying to cover my...
She trailed off, too embarrassed to refer directly to her developing lady parts. Annie laughed.
No, sweetie. And don't worry. The picture wasn't actually snapped until the moment when you slipped backwards, so it's really just a photo of your foot in the air and 30 girls all looking at it with big eyes and dropped jaws. Pretty hilarious, actually. I bet you'll get a lot of likes on Instagram for it.
Caitlin giggled. Really? How do you know that? With mock superiority, Annie said,
I know all,
and winked. Caitlin and Annie shared a laugh like besties at a sleepover, and the freckles on both their cheeks seemed to jump for joy.
What I have for you is this,
Annie said, producing a single diamond earring.
Hey, isn't that Stacy M's? She was showing them to us earlier.
Indeed. Tweens should really learn not to wear their good jewelry to pool parties,
Annie mused.
It fell to the bottom when she and Casey, what's-her-name, were whacking each other with noodles.
She laughed and muttered to herself,
God, teen girls are really violent, actually,
trailing off, shaking her head. Thanks. I'll give it back to her.
As you should. But when you do, know the fortune that comes with it. While you've been down here looking for your bottoms, Stacy M. realized it went missing, and she's sobbing in a lounge chair with 10 girls trying to console her. When you return it to her, her gratitude will bond you to her for life. She'll go on to be her best friend, and you her maid of honor someday, among other lasting joys.
She smiled. Whoa, okay, cool, I guess. Caitlin paused. What does this have to do with Maggie, though?
Oh, yeah. Well, Stacy M. is destined to be popular, so being her friend will come with its advantages, which will forever irk Maggie, of course. And when you and Stacy run for co-ASB president together, Maggie will run against you. The girl is intelligent and capable, but, well, she simply can't win with that attitude.
That makes me sad, said Caitlin, her brow furrowing. For Maggie, I mean.
I know it does, said Annie. But when the time comes, remember the bottom of the pool, and you'll know what to do.
And the next thing she knew, the bubble burst, and Caitlin shot up through the surface, gasping for air. It all played out just as Annie had said. In their junior year, when Stacy M. and Caitlin did win the ASB election, they were presented with a choice.
Since no one ran for treasurer, the presidents appoint one, said Jill, the nerdy secretary.
Oh, cool, like someone who's good at math, right?
Said Stacy M. Caitlin's eyes lit up, remembering Annie, the fairy of the pool.
Maggie's really good at math. Let's ask her.
What? No, she's such a bitch sometimes. Especially to you,
protested Stacy M.
I know, but whatever, she'll do a good job.
And so it all was, just as the fairies had said it would be. Boy, did it itch. The head, mostly. There was this scratchy, oh,
Let's call it barbed wire that lined the inside of the ape mask. That was almost as bad as the heat. Thanks to the djinn's enchantment that forced me to sign on the dotted line a contract that could not be broken, I spent the last 2 weeks in a special form of hell called an ape costume. And that hell was hotter than sitting around a campfire under a heat lamp, smack dab on the equator. An actor. He'd made me an actor, and not even a real one, but one who can only act in the form of an ape, in the most horribly acted and directed film that I'm sure the world would ever see, if they were lucky. All of it was D-movie quality, from the threadbare wardrobes to the papier-mâché set pieces. The only food, not that I could eat it, for there was but a tiny hole in the mask through which I could consume food solely in liquid form, was liverwurst on week-old toast. But it was the writing that made me itch even more than the costume. Ah, but I see the light of day has dawned and my execution is nearly at hand. I guess you'll never know what happened to the King of Hollywood, or Cole the Porter.
But such was the Sultan's desire to hear the end of the tale, that he allowed Scheherazade to live one more day, so that she may finish her story the following night. The 1001 Nights podcast is produced by Morgan Dubin and me, Nathan Kane. Scheherazade is played by the wonderful Ariel Siegel. The story of the envied and the envier was written by Megan Kensel. Megan Kensel is a comedian, writer, and actor living in New York City. She writes satire for The Reductress and Ice Cream News Cream, sketch comedy for Lady Products, and is one half of the web series Roomsies. She's currently working on her first novella, a comedic spin on erotica for the average broke girl. Follow her on Twitter at Megan_Pencil, or go to megankensel.flavors.me to keep up with all the giggles. The Tale of the Second Mendicant was written by Laurie Goldstein, and The Tale of Cole the Porter and the Ladies of Baghdad is written by Marissa Dobson. The music on the 1001 Nights podcast is generously contributed by Heyvan Laralemi, Pharaoh's Daughter, and Eric Hopton. To find out more about the 1001 Nights podcast, visit us online at 1001nightspodcast.com. Recently, we've decided to institute a bring your dog to work policy here at the 1001 Nights podcast, but we're having some issues with jealousy. Just last week, one of the editors said it wasn't fair that the copywriter got a dog and they didn't. In fact, they threw a whole fit saying,
"And it's a spaniel! Spaniels are my favorite!"
Clearly, we're going to have to revisit this issue. Alright, that will do it for Night 15 of the 1001 Nights podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and good morning. Mm-hmm.